It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. When Beth Howard lost her husband, Marcus, she turned to pie making for comfort and healing. Many people have shared the story of her emotional journey, as told in her memoir, Making Peace. That journey eventually led her back to Iowa, her home state. She moved into the American Gothic House in Eldon, opened the Pitchfork Pie Stand, and she's been making pie and news ever since. Now she's published her first cookbook, Ms. American Pie, Buttery Good Pie Recipes and Bold Tales from the American Gothic House. She's with me today, and we're already eating pie. Beth, thank you so much for coming today.
You're welcome.
And you brought strawberry crumble with you.
And I had to make sure that I wasn't talking with my mouth full, right? Because this is my breakfast, and it's actually pretty good, huh?
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's
pie for breakfast, wonderful. I recommend it highly.
It's got all of the important elements there. Now, last time we talked, I came down to the American Gothic House and you taught me how to make an apple pie and taught me so much in just one lesson. But during that conversation, we talked a lot about how recipes are just suggestions. And I think you may have even said, oh, I don't want to write a recipe book. So here you have just published a cookbook, Ms. American Pie. How did that come about?
Did I say that? I didn't want to write a cookbook. That's true. It is very true. I call myself an accidental cookbook author because what I preach is, you know, don't follow the recipe, don't measure. Lo and behold, this thing is selling like crazy. I'm like, My publisher made me put numbers in it, which was really hard. You know, like, what do you mean? I have to put, like, you know, how much? I don't know how many
about
apples.
A small handful.
Yeah. Because I get asked all the time, how many apples go in an apple pie? Well, I don't know. How big is your dish? How big are your apples? There's so many variables. So it's really hard to come up with concrete numbers. And same is true with oven temperatures and baking times. You know, there's so many variables in how ovens are set. And so I just try to tell people, use this as a guideline and don't follow it so closely. You have to pay attention to what's in front of you. That's the main lesson of anything from this book, is just pay attention to what is happening in real life. Don't go by the numbers.
I think it's kind of funny that, I mean, you teach pie making classes, and so you are giving this skill to a lot of other people. You didn't want to write a cookbook, and you are constantly preaching to people that they should make their own pie. In fact, the first title, the working title for this book was...
Can you say it on the air?
Yeah, you can
say
it.
Okay. Yeah, make your own damn pie.
But you are selling pie at the Pitchfork Pie Stand. The thing that people seem to want from you is an instruction manual and the pie itself.
And the pie itself. Well, hopefully I, you know, will wean people off of that buying pie from me, because I honestly, my body is tired physically. I have a frozen shoulder, and my physical therapist said, that's not from yoga. That's from too much pie making and carrying around those 50-pound bags of flour. And I'm like, yeah, you know. And plus, this thing has outgrown my tiny little kitchen. You've been to the American Gothic House. It's small. So it's not like I can scale this thing to be a commercial bakery. And that wasn't what I set out to do in the first place. And, you know, making the pie and selling it was a great way to sort of settle into that new community when I moved to Eldon almost 4 years ago now. And it was a great way to connect with people and provide something nice for the tourists. But, you know, I think I'm kind of need to move on a little bit from that. I've got too many oven burn scars on my arms now. It's like, oh, I think the nature is telling me.
But you are planning on having the Pitchfork Pie Stand this summer?
I am going to do it for 3 weekends. I'll have it open Memorial Day weekend. And then Gothic Days weekend, which is a big festival in Eldon. That's June 14th and 15th. And then 4th of July. And I'll be open the Friday, Saturday of that weekend. So if people want to take a pie to their family picnic or something, I'll make that available. But then after that, I'm going to try to sort of scale back and maybe work on another book and maybe do a little traveling. Just kind of need to get some inspiration for some new ideas. You know, what's next? I don't know.
Well, this cookbook is not just full of recipes. It is full of recipes, wonderful recipes, beautiful pictures. And the whole photo shoot was done at the American Gothic House,
yes,
right?
Yes, it was.
So you get to see little glimpses of the inside of the kitchen of the American Gothic House, etc. But it's also a philosophy book. You're sharing your philosophy about pie making and a little bit of your philosophy about life as well.
Right. Well, I have to say I'm really grateful to my publisher, who really understood what I'm about and what my message is. And she didn't try to force me into doing something that was just a traditional cookbook. You know, she took my pie class too. Janine Dillon is her name. She's in New York. And I loved how she got it. You know, she she wasn't a pie maker herself either, but she loved the idea of pie. And she really gave me the space on the pages to tell my stories, to share my philosophy, to, you know, help. Well, you know, even you said in your intro, like, this is an unconventional cookbook. You know, this is, you know, what publisher lets you write a cookbook that says, here's the recipes, but don't follow it.
Right.
You know, that's a pretty nice publisher, I would say. I had a great working relationship with her. And the designer, she did a great job with the book, you know, with all the gingham and all the fresh pages.
And did you make all the pies that are pictured in this book?
I did. I made all the pies.
How long did it take you to do that photo shoot? That must have been quite an incredible undertaking.
We did about four different shoots separately, but it was right after the 4th of July last summer. They came for about a week and they converged on my house, and it was so stressful. I have to say, it was I look at those pictures, I go, well, it looks pretty now, but you should have seen the mess behind the scenes, you know, and all the chaos and all the people in my house and all the cameras and lighting and all that. And you know, there were a lot of pies to make. I think I made 35 pies in 1 week.
Wow.
And some of them I'd never made before.
And, well, of course,
no pressure to get them, you know, camera ready when I didn't even know what I was doing.
There's another thing that you preach and had to violate, and that is that you want pies, and your pies do look homemade, but you want pies to look homemade. You tell people, don't worry about what the crust looks like. Don't worry if you have to piece things together. It should look like it tastes good. So
right.
You had to make these beautiful as well as delicious.
Well, I guess pie by nature is beautiful, and you know, they hired a food stylist. And I have to confess, I don't know if I should talk about this, but you know, the story behind the story is I didn't want a food stylist working on this. I didn't want them to prod the piece of pie and, you know, make it look pretty. I go, no, if you're going to cut a slice of pie for a picture, it should just look like in real life, you know, natural. So you know, that was again, you know, sticking with my philosophy, it should look homemade. It just should be messy. That's real life, you know. So yeah. It was great.
Well, let's talk about some of your pie principles, because that's how you start the book, by really laying out some of your philosophy of pie making. And something that you say often, you said it last time we were together, pie is not about perfection.
Right. And I stand by that. It, you know, people come to my classes and they get upset that there's a little crack or a wrinkle or a hole in their dough. And usually it's the bottom crust. You know, it's the first crust they roll out. And they absolutely panic. And I just kind of laughed. You know, it's the bottom crust. No one's going to see it. You're going to put fruit in it. And, you know, people put so much pressure on themselves to have something look so perfect. And it's, you know, there's a real emotional response to a homemade pie that, you know, it's got something extra in it, some special secret ingredient of, you know, maybe it's a little darker on one edge than the other. And maybe it's really rustic and rugged looking on top. And I love that. You know, I that's why at my pie stand, I let people pick out which pie looks the best to them, because they all look different. You know, they're all a little slightly, you know, hopefully flawed, if you will, in some way. And but there's something that reminds them of their grandmother. I mean, just that homemade quality, that imperfection, that, you know, not store-bought.
Right. With the way that pie has sort of evolved in our culture, it's become a special occasion food for a lot of us. So do you think that's where a lot of the pressure comes from, that the only time I make pie is for Thanksgiving and for Christmas? And so it has to be perfect because it's this big event.
Right. Well, people just, again, they put too much pressure on themselves about it. And they think it's harder than it is. You know, there's just this built-in terror about making your own dough. So even when people do make it for Thanksgiving, they're still buying the store-bought crust.
Right.
And I say, well, nothing tastes better than a homemade crust, really. And my secret really for that is butter. I use real butter and a little combo of butter and vegetable shortening. But that's what I'm just trying to teach people. Hey, it's really actually quite quick. And if you have all your little tools, and by tools, I mean, hello, it's a paring knife and, you know, a pair of hands. You know, you don't need a lot of stuff to make pie. You know, it's really much easier than people think. And I just want to take that mystique
right
out of it.
Well, and I think a lot of people, your next principle is that pie is an expression of your individuality. But again, I think a lot of people put a lot of family history into pie. So if I'm going to make pie for Christmas, I want it to be like my grandmother's pie. But we should make the pie our own, right?
Right. Well, and that's funny that you know, the grandmother thing, too, is that people want to make the pie like their grandmother, but I hear again and again, I never learned to make it for my grandmother because she didn't follow a recipe. Hello. Like, so, you know, I'm trying to bring that back around and say, yeah, this is probably like your grandma's pie. But that's where you can make it your own because, you know, the grandmas, my mom always accuses me of, you're just like your grandmother, you know, you don't measure either. And I, you know, she sees me throwing stuff in my hand and then tossing it in the bowl, not measuring. Right. It's, you know, pie is not about precision. That's another one of my philosophies. And so, you know, I just hope you
didn't learn to make pie from your grandma.
No,
either, right?
I didn't. I learned from a retired pastry chef when I was caught stealing apples out of his orchard in the state of Washington while I was on a bicycle trip. That's become kind of a, you know, famous story that keeps following me around. But yeah, I like the idea that people can make pie the way they want it to make. And if their grandmother made their crust with lard, then they should make their crust with lard. That's fine. You know, that's what I'm trying to say is just forget about rules. Don't even follow my recipes. Just do it. Just the point is just to do it, just to get your hands in the dough and, you know, get back in the kitchen and not be afraid of it and take a little extra time. It's really not that time consuming. The most time consuming part about it is the baking time in the oven.
Right. Well, and I know that part of the reason that you sort of have rebelled against cookbooks is it does seem like recipes are getting more and more complicated.
Yes.
And I see you roll
your
eyes.
I was going to fess up to that. Yes. And I just rolled my eyes. I just get irked by that. I'm like, come on. I want apple pie. I don't want apple, bourbon, bacon, caramel pie. You know, like, I don't know. What else are you going to add to that thing? I just keep it simple. That's what the best pies are, the simplest pies where you can taste the fruit and what's in it. But I don't know. I don't understand that need to one up each other or something. Is it like a competition? I don't know. I just that's why everybody who gave me a recipe for this book, I like if there were any extra things in it, I took them out. You know, I just simplified even the recipes that I got for the book.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Beth Howard about her new cookbook, Ms. American Pie, Buttery Good Pie Recipes and Bold Tales from the American Gothic House. This is Talk of Iowa.
To the left, to the left, to the left. Shake it back. Do the pimp walk. To the right now, honey. To the left, to the left, to the left. Shake it back. Wipe me down. Now watch me work.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and we're talking pie this hour. With me today is Beth Howard. She is the author of the new cookbook, Ms. American Pie, and you probably know a little bit about her. I've talked to her before about her memoir, Making Peace. She lives in the American Gothic House, the house made famous in that painting by Grant Wood. In Eldon, she has the pitchfork pie stand there, although truncated this summer. And she has just published this cookbook. We're going to talk more about her pie philosophy, pie principles. We're going to demystify the crust, and we'll talk about some of these special recipes as well. And you're welcome to join our conversation. Is there a pie recipe you just can't master? Is there a question you have? Is there a pie that's really important to you that you think should have been included in the chapter of pies to seduce by? Give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we get into talking about the crust, which I think is really the most magical part of your process, that was the thing that I was most frightened of making. I avoided making pie because of the crust, and you really helped me personally, and I'm sure you've helped many others. But I want to talk about pie contests for just a moment, because one of the first things that brought you back to Iowa, in fact, the first thing that brought you back to Iowa, was judging every single pie contest at the Iowa State Fair. And then you ended up deciding to stay, but you have kind of turned away from pie contests. What is it that you don't like about pie contests?
I can answer that very easily. What I don't like about pie contests is that if somebody doesn't win, they feel discouraged. And then they don't ever want to make another pie again because they feel bad. They feel like they're not good enough, that they can't do it. And I just, oh, that breaks my heart when I hear people say that. And
so you've actually talked to people who said, I lost at the Iowa State Fair and I just don't want to bake
anymore. I'm no good and I'm going to give it up.
Oh.
I was like, You got to be kidding me. No, that's not right. That's not what it's about. And yeah, that really is, that's it for me. I just, oh no, it's just, I don't want to discourage people. I want to encourage people. So that's why I've shied away. Plus, I don't know, it's just, that competition thing just gets a little too cutthroat. I'm like, really? You know, what is this? It's that idea of people are trying to make a perfect pie, and I absolutely don't believe in that. So, yeah, I just like to encourage people to make it and share it, bottom line. And, you know, ironically, I am sponsoring a pie contest this summer at the Iowa State Fair. But, you know, that's because I did include a pie chapter in there with recipes of pies to compete in the Iowa State
Fair. And your experience judging pies at the Iowa State Fair certainly introduced you to some really interesting and fun pies.
And some fun people, too. You know, for me, it's still always about the people and the stories behind the pie. But, yes, I'm grateful, you know, to the Iowa State Fair and to the pie contest, because really that did set me on this new journey. If I hadn't come back here, I wouldn't have ended up staying in Iowa. So I had to include it in the book. And of course, like I said, the friends I made and the pies, the French silk pie by Lana Ross is still one of my favorites. In fact, that one is so good. I featured it both in Making Peace and in my new cookbook. And another friend of mine, Kathleen Bebout, she's a first place winner as well. So she's got a couple of recipes in my book. So, yeah, apricot and toffee pecan and...
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
Right, exactly. It's a good thing I have strawberry pie right in front of me, or I'd be so hungry right now. Let's talk about crust, because you already mentioned you use butter and you use vegetable shortening, and you use about half and half.
I do. Half and half.
All right. Now, tell me where you know, a lot of people say, I can't bake a good pie without lard, or, you know, butter's too runny. You hear all kinds of different things about making pie and making pie crust. Why butter and vegetable shortening?
I love the taste of butter. And in fact, when I travel in Europe, for example, they don't have vegetable shortening over there. So I use all butter, which I see no problem with that. But, you know, that's my preference. But if people want to make pie with whatever, all lard or all whatever, fill in the blank, I was going to say butter flavored Crisco. Ugh. But, you know, hey, if you already are comfortable with your recipe and you already like making it and people like your pie, just stick with what you love. You know, that's not for me to say what you're going to put in your pie. It's your pie. But for the people who are afraid of making their own dough and, you know, sort of getting introduced, this is just the way I learned it. It's the way that works for me, and it's a way that I can teach people to help them, you know, and people can alter the recipe once they kind of get the feel of it. But really what I'm teaching is feel. I'm not really teaching specific ingredients. So when people call in this morning, it's like, please don't try to stump me with recipe questions, because I may not be able to answer them. I may give you a smart alecky answer, because, you know, it's really just about getting your hands in the dough, getting over the fear.
And walk me through the process. If you're making, let's say, one double crust pie, what do you do?
So 2.5 cups of flour, a little dash of salt, 1/2 cup of butter, which is 1 stick, and 1/2 cup of vegetable shortening. And I cut the butter and the shortening are chilled.
So they're straight from the fridge.
Yes. And I cut the stick of butter up into some big chunks so that it's a little less physically demanding on my, you know, forearms. You should see my muscular arms are not from working out. It's from making pie. And ice water. And so first I break up the butter and the shortening with my thumbs, kind of break them up and lift some flour up as I go along.
All right, and you're not using a pastry cutter.
No, I'm using my two bare hands. I like that tactile experience. It's about engaging your senses. And some people get squeamish at first. Oh, I don't want to get my hands dirty. But then once they get their hands in the bowl, then, oh, this feels so good. And then there's this tendency to want to keep working the dough. Oh, this feels so good. I'm going to keep doing it. No. It's like, that's where I have to come around and, you know, say, hey, just take it easy. You want to leave it in big chunks. Big chunks of butter that's the thing that's going to melt and create these flaky layers like on a croissant. You know, it's all about the butter.
All right. So you break these up with your hands. You add the ice water. How much ice water do you add?
Right. No, haha. I know why you're asking that question, because that's my biggest departure from traditional recipes, where the cookbook will tell you, you know, add 5 or 6 tablespoons and not a drop more of ice water. And I say, well, yeah, these poor people come to my classes and they're like, well, my dough's always been too dry. It won't roll out. I'm like, that's because you followed the recipe. You know, just use as much water as your dough needs. It's not going to hurt it. It's going to hold it together. And so I always say, let the water hold the dough together, not force. People try to force the dough, and that's where they get into trouble, and that's when their dough gets tough.
Because they're overhandling it
because they're trying to get their hands to make it hold together when it's actually the ice water that's going to hold it together.
And how do you know when there's enough? It's hard to not show me, but...
Right. Okay. Well, I use my hands. I keep my fingers loose and just, you know, dig them down all the way to the bottom of the bowl underneath and lift up like I'm tossing salad dressing into a salad. So my hands are like human salad tongs. And pretty soon, the more water, you have to just do it fluff it a couple times, add some more water, fluff it a few more times, toss it, you know, and add a little more water. And then eventually it's going to start to hold together on its own. You're going to feel the weight of the water. And then you can do a little squeeze test to see if it's going to actually stick. And I like my dough to be a little bit like almost, but not quite as tacky as a biscuit dough. And then I'll dip my hands in a bowl of flour, or, you know, coat my hands in flour, make little what I call flour mittens. And that takes the stickiness right out of it when you go to form it into a disc.
All right. And you want, let's say, the chunks of butter. You said you want them fairly big, like the size of an almond.
Yes. And I say Brazil nuts are a little too big and, you know, peanuts, okay. But almond, think almond size.
All right. And really, you emphasize this again and again and again in your book.
What?
That not overworking the dough. That's the real secret.
Right. Well, and I'll tell you where it gets overworked really is that first stage of the butter chunks get too fine and too small. It's like then it becomes this, you know, this texture that's just too powdery or not powdery, but just, you know, not there's no more chunks left in it. Leave the chunks.
And smooth then, and dense is what
yeah,
it becomes.
And so because when you roll it out, what you want to see is those chunks of butter. You'll see actually a marbled pattern in your dough. And again, though, letting the water do the work, that's where it gets overhandled a lot is just by trying to force it together without letting the water do the work.
Well, and a lot of us get a little nervous when we roll it out because, of course, we want it to be the right shape and the size to fit the pie pan. But that's another something you warn us about. Don't roll it out more than twice ever and try not to roll it out more than once, right?
Oh, well, I often will do more than twice. But, you know, I just mean the approach to that is, you know, just tackle it with confidence. Like you're riding a horse, you want to take the horse by the reins, and the horse knows if you're scared, and pie dough is kind of the same thing. I always talk about that in my classes. And then when I say not rolling it out more than twice, it's because you're going to have like some leftover stuff from that you've rolled your dough bigger than your pie dish. So when you trim it, you'll have a lot of excess. And then if you roll that a second or third time, you'll see it starts to get tough. So you won't want to use it after a certain point. But no rules on that.
And don't let the pie dough see your fear. It's really...
Exactly.
All right. I'm talking with Beth Howard. She is the author of the new cookbook, Ms. American Pie, Buttery Good Pie Recipes and Bold Tales from the American Gothic House. And you're welcome to join our conversation as well at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Maria's on the line from Iowa City. Hi, Maria.
Hi. I had a quick question about crust. I always used to use aluminum foil around the edges to keep it from burning. And I finally got an aluminum cover. I think it's made of aluminum. And that seemed to make the outer crust burn more. And so when I took the aluminum cover off in the last 15 minutes of baking, it actually burnt really badly. Now I'm thinking of going back to aluminum foil. Would that be a good idea?
No. I would say, you know what? Turn your oven down. That's it. You know, your oven may bake really hot. So just keep a closer eye on the baking process. And if it starts to get too dark, turn your oven down. Simple.
Okay. So, now, also about orange peel and rhubarb pie. One of my newer Betty Crocker cookbooks, both of which are very old, recommends adding orange peel, orange zest, if you will, to a half a teaspoon to a rhubarb pie. The older one says no orange peel. I kind of like a little extra orange peel, a little orange peel in it, but is there a danger of adding too much?
It's your pie, and if you like it,
I should have known
if you like it, then you add however much you want. There are no rules at all. Absolutely no rules. You know, if you like it, add it. That's it.
Well, I'm going to have to get an honest answer out of my family about whether they like it.
There you go. And you know what?
And this may be your special touch, Maria, your famous rhubarb pie with orange zest.
Okay.
And if they don't like it, then you just divide up your ingredients and you make little pies, you know, so they can have their one, the one without the orange peel, and you make more yours with. That's it. There's lots of compromises there.
Well, I notice they're eating it, so maybe that's a vote of confidence.
That's all that matters.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Maria, thank you so much for your call. And a lot of people do cover the crust with aluminum foil or think that they need to do something like that. That's not something you do.
Never. I used to fuss with that foil, and it would always fall off in the oven. It was so difficult to get it on there, and you know, you have to piece it together. It would stick to the dough. I don't even get me started. And you know, I'm not a big fan of all those contraptions that, you know, try to save your pie. I just say that's where, again, where I say pay attention to what's happening in front of you. And ovens bake differently. They just do. And sometimes you have to turn it down.
All right. Turn it down and just bake it for longer.
Yes.
All right. The one of the things that you and I talked about last time I visited you at the American Gothic House, and this was something that always mystified me when I would try to make pie. I would make the crust, and I would crimp it, and it would look ugly, and it would fall apart in places. And you taught me how to crimp the pie crust. But then in your book, you say there's no right way. But tell us how you do it.
Oh, in terms of crimping?
Sealing the pie.
No, there's just a whole bunch of different ways. That's why I say there's no right way. It's just that's another part of the pie where you can put your own personal signature into it. Even when people crimp it the way I do with that kind of ruffled edge, it's funny because everybody's hands are different, right? So I get men with these big burly hands in my pie classes, and then their ruffles are like really big and wide and far apart. You know, it's hilarious. It's cute because everybody's fingerprints on the pie are going to look different. And when I first learned to make pie, I crimped the edge with a fork. And then I started doing it with sort of opposing thumbs going around. So it was like this little zigzag. And that looks nice. But then I happened to learn that ruffled technique from my pie mentor, Mary Spellman. And that's just the way I do it now. But it really, there's no rules on that.
And you fold the pie crust under.
I do roll it under. I take the bottom crust and the top crust, and I have it trimmed so it's just about an inch away from the edge. And then I roll it like it's a pencil between my fingers. And that's just to set it up to seal the top and the bottom to keep the juice from bubbling out when it bakes. So I roll that, and it sits all the way around the rim of the pie. And you run your fingers around the bottom of the rim to make sure there's no crust hanging over. And then you don't even have to crimp it. You could just stop there. You know, that the whole point is just to have the top and the bottom sealed. The crimping is just decorative, purely decorative. You could do like a Martha Stewart thing and cut out little leaves and put them all the way around the border of the pie. That looks nice. But, you know, I don't usually have that much time to be artistic like that.
But we do need vents.
Yes.
And you have a signature vent, of course, in the top of your pitchfork pie stand pies,
right,
which is a pitchfork.
And that's
naturally.
And it's very easy to carve that into the top. That's luckily for me. But it's also got another purpose, because when an apple pie is baking, you know, you don't always know if the apples have cooked all the way through. So I use the vent hole as an access point for my paring knife to slide down and test the apples to see if they've softened and see if they're done.
And you also do an egg wash.
I do. The egg wash comes first. The vent holes come after because the egg wash will actually seal your holes shut. But that's a good thing, too, because the egg holes will seal your holes shut, as in like whatever blemishes in your crust, what you perceive as blemishes, I might add. But yeah, the egg wash gives it a nice sort of golden brown, shiny finish. It just looks pretty.
All right. And that was some people do egg white, but you don't bother separating.
Right. I just use the whole egg. And for one pie, you probably will use about half of the egg. And thank you, by the way, for the fresh farm eggs you brought for me.
You're
today.
Welcome.
We did a good trade, a pie for fresh farm eggs. I think that was pretty fair.
Right, I think we both feel like winners in this exchange.
But with the egg thing, it's just one less thing to have to remember. You don't have to separate it. It's one less step. You don't have to add anything. It's just the egg, period. It's just, again, simplification of this process.
We're going to take another short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Beth Howard. She is a pie maker. She also lives at the American Gothic House in Eldon and is the proprietor of the Pitchfork Pie Stand there. She is the author of a memoir called Making Peace and now has a new book out. It's a cookbook called Ms. American Pie, Buttery Good Pie Recipes and Bold Tales from the American Gothic House. And she also blogs that the world needs more pie. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Turn down, keep me up till dawn. Come and get me, babe, because soon I will be gone. Be my honey pie, never say goodbye. If you don't love me, I will die. Be my honey pie. What good are the stars? It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm talking with Beth Howard about her new cookbook, Ms. American Pie, Buttery Good Pie Recipes and Bold Tales from the American Gothic House. And you're welcome to join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I want to do one more question about crust before we move on and get back to the phones. But you also bust some pie myths. And a lot of us have heard that if you want to make great crust, you make the crust and then you refrigerate it before you roll it out. You don't do that either.
I know. People are going to hate me, right? I think pastry – people who went to pastry school, I don't know. I don't refrigerate my crust. And the reason is because I have all those chilled ingredients and – so the crust is still cool to the touch, and it's nice and supple right when you first make it. And if you refrigerate it, then it becomes hard, and then it's harder to roll. So the only time I refrigerate it is when my kitchen gets really hot. Or,
which it does.
Yes, which it does. And I'll roll out the bottom crust right away, and then maybe I'll refrigerate the second disc of dough to roll out the top crust after I've peeled my apples. That's kind of the sequence I do things. But you know, I don't make a point of refrigerating it. You know what I say is the pioneers made pie, and they did not have refrigerators, okay? So I don't know where all these rules came in about, you know, you said my book is unconventional. I say my recipes are the way it used to be made before it got all complicated, before we had all the gadgetry, before we had electricity. You know, pie's been around for thousands of years. It survived all this time. I'm just trying to take it back to the basics and remind people, hey, if the pilgrims and the pioneers could make pie and they're on the wagon trail, you know, I'm sure you could do a fine job too with your, you know, nice marble kitchen countertops.
All right. Dennis is on the line in Polk City. Hi, Dennis. Dennis, are you there?
Yeah, I just had to take you off speakerphone.
All right. What's
your
question?
Question for Beth. I like to experiment with like natural ingredients and stuff. And one of my favorite things is coconut oil. And there's a product you can buy at a health food store that's like a coconut margarine. Has she ever tried making pie crust with coconut oil or coconut margarine stuff?
I have not, and I probably won't. But good for you that you found something that works for you and for your dietary needs. You know, I get people, vegetarians come into my pie stand and, you know, and old farmers come into my pie stand. And you know, a lot of people have just different approaches to it. At the Iowa State Fair, some ladies make their pie crust with vegetable oil. And I think that coconut oil sounds like a sort of a good new alternative. If you have dietary preferences, I should say. My question to you is, does it taste kind of coconutty? Because I've got a friend who's started to cook with coconut oil, and she said it's supposed to be healthy, but actually it does taste like coconut. It makes the food taste like coconut. So I'm curious.
Oh, I cook everything coconut oil, and I love it.
Well, I love coconut too, but I'm not really into experimenting with my recipes. I don't take the time to do that. Really, I'm just cranking out the pies the way I know how to make them and giving them away and get it. You know, that's I don't really I'm not a foodie in that way where I'm looking for new techniques. I just like to, it's more about the philosophy for me.
And sticking with the basics. Although you do have a gluten-free pie crust recipe
I do.
In the book.
I have a lot of friends who are gluten-free, so I kind of had to figure out something at some point to make my friends happy, you know. But
thank you so much for your call, Dennis. And we had a caller on the line earlier, but they couldn't stay on, looking for an oatmeal pie recipe. I don't think you included one of those in the book. I don't remember.
There is an oatmeal pecan.
Okay, oatmeal pecan. All right.
And it tastes a lot like a pecan pie. And in fact, the woman who I got the recipe from, her name is Kathy Knapp, and she runs the Pioneer Cafe in Pietown, New Mexico, which alone, you know, she had to be in the book. But she makes it so much better than I do. I doubled the amount of oatmeal because if you're going to have an oatmeal pecan pie, I wanted to have a lot of oatmeal in it. But she doesn't make it with as much oatmeal. Hers is really good. So, you know, you can experiment with the amount of ingredients in that particular one. It's a little bit like a pecan pie, though. It has some clove in it. And it's, oh, it is really good and easy to make.
Another caller wanted to know if you could give him a suggestion on how to make a pie without a crust. He says his mother, who passed away last year, took her secret recipe with her.
I often do, unfortunately. Pie without a crust is basically a cobbler. So you just make the filling and, you know, maybe you do something with a crumble topping, like a kind of like a crisp or, you know, cobbler has kind of more of a biscuit topping. But I have some recipes for that in the book, too. And just suggestions of, you know, hey, take it, take the pressure off. You know, if you don't have the courage to make the crust, then, you know, you don't need it.
All right. Let's get back to the phones. Mark is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I really enjoy the show. Just wanted to ask Beth if she was married or not.
All right, Mark.
Okay. Thank you for calling.
Mark, thanks a lot for your call. But you do actually write a whole chapter about pies in use of seduction. You have a famous story about your parents because your mother made your father a banana cream pie, right?
That was his favorite pie. So when they were dating, she knew that he loved banana cream pie, and she invited him over. And I always love telling the story about their meal. She made him a tuna casserole and a Jell-O salad. Like, wow, that's romantic. But she did make a homemade banana cream pie, and he devoured it, and he promptly proposed to her. So I always credit that pie with the reason I was born.
And this is a technique you've used in relationships.
Yes, I have.
You had a very funny story in the book about a man that you made a pie for, and he lived in a treehouse.
Oh, gosh, yeah, Scott, the bank robber. That story alone is worth buying the book for, I would say. I won't elaborate, but yeah. Oh, Scott. Well.
All right. I want to let's get back to the phones here. And we have a caller in Dubuque. Hello.
Hi. I have a question for Beth. I love making pie, and I've always really just made fruit pies or pumpkin pies. And my husband, when we were listening to this show today, said to me, well, I'd really like it if you tried to make me a French silk pie sometime.
Mm.
So I was just wondering. And that,
beware.
I don't like chocolate at all. So that's just, I don't even know where to begin. But I would be up for the challenge. So I just wonder if you have any tips or recommendations on ingredients to try for that kind of pie?
Oh, French silk. That recipe is in my book. I got the recipe from Lana Ross from Indianola, Iowa. It is the most amazing pie. I made one of those when I was on my book tour a couple weeks ago in Dallas, and I offered four different kinds of pie, and that French silk disappeared so fast. I use unsweetened baking chocolate. And then I do have a stand-up mixer that I use because you have to beat the eggs in. And Lana beats them in one at a time and lets the mixer run for 5 minutes for each individual egg. Of course, I speed that up a little bit. I never follow anybody's recipes, including my own. But the French silk, I highly recommend it. It's really not a difficult pie to make. You do have to pre-bake the crust, the bottom crust, and then you use raw eggs, and then you refrigerate the dough. So I do have a little tip in the book also about the eggs being raw. Some people don't like that, but if you buy pasteurized eggs, that's a way around it. And then it has a whipped cream topping. Your husband's going to love it, and just be prepared.
I know. Okay,
be prepared.
Well,
he's going to love it a lot.
All right, Sarah, thanks a lot for your call. And here's a question, another question about crust. I love making homemade pie, but I have a question about the crust. I'm not good at rolling it evenly. Would you suggest a thinner bottom crust over a thicker bottom crust, or does it even matter?
Here's what I learned on the bottom crust. Roll it thin enough so that if you had a striped tablecloth underneath, you'd actually start to see the stripes of the tablecloth coming through the dough. Just think a little bit translucent, but not completely thin. So if it's too thin, it'll be really hard to get it off the rolling surface. Too thick, then it's just too much dough, period. So there's like that little in between. Again, there's no measuring tape that we're looking at here. It's like there's no police coming around saying your dough is not thin enough, it's too thick. But, you know, just experiment with it and feel free to experiment with the pressure, the amount of pressure you put on the rolling pin and the direction you go. And you can coax it into whatever shape. You know, if you're going for a round pie dish, then you want to coax your dough and roll all the way off the edge of the dough so you get the edges to be thinned out as well.
All right. And you throw down flour, you roll it out on your table, your butcher block table, you roll it out on the counter. No big secrets there for you?
I call that sprinkling the surface with flour. I call that my insurance policy, because it's that flour is going to help keep your dough from sticking, and that's going to help you from getting upset and, you know, your dough sticking and tearing, and then you're like, oh, I can't do this. You know, that's the thing that's really going to help, is a little sprinkling of flour. I use it's a rectangle piece of metal called a bench scraper or pastry scraper. You can, in the store, it's called a bash and chop. It's just this funny little very, very simple rectangle tool. And I use that to help get the pie dough off the rolling surface, too. And that helps. And, you know, remember, you've got those big chunks of butter in there. And they can, if your kitchen is warm, that can make the dough a little bit sticky. It'll tend to stick a little bit more. But just take your time. Make sure that you've sprinkled enough flour. Stop and clean off your rolling pin, because if it gets sticky on the rolling pin, that's going to be a problem, too.
Okay. And you say don't be too afraid of using too much flour. That's another thing that sometimes you get warned about.
Oh, all these cookbooks are instilling the fear of God in people. Oh, don't do this, don't do that, or your pie is not going to turn out. Well, no wonder people are afraid to make their own. There's all these rules. And I'm saying, don't worry about it. Figure it out. Figure out what is your problem. Here's the troubleshooting tips. If it's doing this, do that. If it's doing this, do that. You know, the liberal use of flour, I mean, within reason, but it's like, it's going to help you. It's the thing that's going to help keep your dough from sticking. So go ahead and use it.
Now, something that you hear a lot from your pie students, you hear it a lot from the people who come and visit you at the Pitchfork Pie Stand. People say, oh, I would love to do what you do. and you have a bit of a cautionary tale about that.
Oh, my God. Wait, where do I start, Charity?
But you do hear that a lot. It seems
I do
like
hear
a,
that
a dream
lot.
That people have.
Well, I have a chapter in my cookbook that's, how to run a pie stand, basically, because I do get asked a lot, how can I do what you do? And first of all, you know, I say that I've pared down my expenses to the rock bottom. You know, I live in rural Iowa. I live 100 miles from the nearest Starbucks. So it's not like I have a lot of places where I can go spend money. And my rent is really cheap. And it's especially cheap because I live in a tourist attraction where they said that the rent is so low because of the obvious hassles, you know, like people looking in my window. So, you know, I started with that, just getting my expenses down and making some sacrifices that way. And the fact is, people think I'm so successful and go, oh, God, to be honest, I don't make very much money at all. It's just that my overhead is really low. And it's, you know, it gets tiring. It's making pie, like when you're making 100 a weekend, is very physical. And that's pretty demanding. And there's this restaurant in Ottumwa, Iowa called the Canteen Lunch in the Alley. And they used to be famous. When I was a kid growing up in Ottumwa, they were famous for their pie. And I tried to track down the old pie bakers from that place. And the woman who was their last baker, she had died, but I found her daughters, and they said, our mom wouldn't let us go into the pie baking business because she said it was too much work. And I'm like, oh, I feel her pain. But, you know, it's been a good way to connect with people. It's just been fun. It's a feel-good thing. People walk in my door and they say, God, it must feel good to be in a job that makes people happy. And I, you know, at the end of the day, it's the happiness factor that really matters.
Well, and it's, you can buy pie a number of different places. Out in my neighborhood, a lot of the Amish ladies make pie, and they'll sell their homemade pies for $7, which seems very, very inexpensive to me, given the amount of labor that goes into it. Now, you can go to a fancy restaurant in Chicago and buy some hipster pie for $26.
Oh, $35.
All right.
Yeah, believe me, I do the research. I think some of the pies are made by machine. That's why you're having to pay less, because they have these things called a sheeter, and it runs your dough right through a machine that flattens it into a perfect round shape for your pies. I mean, ingredients too. I don't think everybody's using top of the line ingredients. And in my pies, I pack them full. I mean, people walk out of my pie stand and they go, wow, this pie is so heavy. I'm like, yeah, I probably put double the amount of fresh fruit in it. And we were doing everything by hand with like strawberries, right. You know, once sitting there with a paring knife for 3 hours cleaning strawberries. So, yeah, but the hipster pie stuff, yeah, that's, I don't know. It's kind of fun to see that. It's fun to see pie so being so popular.
Right.
But I still like to encourage people to make their own.
Sean is on the line in Marion. Hi, Sean.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. What's your question?
My question is that I've got a recipe for a homemade apple pie where you make the filling by scratch. I was wondering, can you substitute the apples for pears?
Well,
pear pie.
Yeah. You know, I've tried that. I have a neighbor who she would bring bushels of pears over from her tree, and I tried and tried and tried to make those pears work. You know, I love using backyard fruit, especially when it's free. And I just couldn't get the same kind of tartness. It wasn't as satisfying. I tried everything. I put ginger in it. I put, I don't know, brown sugar instead of white sugar. I just couldn't quite come up with anything. But if you want to try it, you know, go ahead. You can put anything in it. You can come up with your own combination. You could maybe do pear and apple combo. Maybe try that.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Sean. And this is from Christine on Facebook. I'm curious if I can use frozen blueberries for pie and if there's anything special I need to worry about if I do.
Yes, you can use frozen berries. And you might want to just keep an eye on the baking time. It might need to bake a little bit longer. I do start with the berries frozen. And also, if they're too juicy, then switch from cornstarch to tapioca. But with blueberries, you should be okay with just cornstarch.
Okay. And then tapioca seems to be one of your secrets.
The superpower of thickeners. I have it broken down. I use flour to thicken my apple pie. I use cornstarch to thicken blueberry pie. And then for peach pie, when they're ripe and super juicy, I could never get my peach pie to set up. It was always just absolutely runny until I learned that, hey, there's this thing called minute tapioca, and it does wonders, you know, to keep the juice from becoming too juicy.
After all these thousands of pies and the stress of the pie stand, is making pie still therapeutic for you?
I made you a pie last night, and that was therapeutic. You know, I really love making one pie at a time, and especially when it has a purpose, you know, when I know I'm making it for somebody special. And plus, I got to eat a piece myself.
Right.
So it was
Beth Howard, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Beth Howard is the author of the new cookbook, Ms. American Pie, Buttery Good Pie Recipes and Bold Tales from the American Gothic House. She'll be at Prairie Lights on Saturday, right?
Yes, I will.
Saturday
2
evening.
O'clock.
All right, Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock, Prairie Lights in Iowa City. This is Talk of Iowa. With me now is Ben Kiefer. What's coming up on River to River, Ben?
Hi, Charity. Very quickly, yesterday morning, I climbed aboard the tractor of Jim Slodek, of a Johnson County farmer, to get his view on the new planting season. Also, the serious problem of soil erosion. Talk to him about that. We'll also have agronomist Rick Cruz on the program.
All right, River to River today at noon. This is Talk of Iowa.
Rhubarb pie. Rhubarb pie. It might rain tomorrow. Better get some before it dies. Hey, little mama, can I walk with you? Got a hole in my pocket, another one in my shoe. I was in the kitchen, setting out the windowsill.